Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network. All things political this hour. The Senate health care bill at the top of the show. There could be a vote this week, although four conservative Republican senators are not ready to vote for the bill because it doesn't go far enough in repealing Obamacare. And five moderate Republican senators have concerns about the bill's impact on Medicaid patients and less money for opioid addiction treatment. The Congressional Budget Office will release an estimate of the bill's cost and impact, and that could happen as soon as today. The Supreme Court today agreed to allow a limited version of President Trump's ban on travelers from six mostly Muslim countries. This fall, they will consider the president's powers in immigration matters. President Trump asked for an apology over the investigations into Russia's election meddling and possible collusion with his 2016 campaign. In a series of tweets today, he accused President Obama of purposely ignoring Russian efforts to interfere in last year's presidential election for fear of altering the course of an expected victory by Hillary Clinton. So those are a few of the things we'll be talking about this hour. We're going to have two guests with us, half hour. Jason Dick, deputy editor at Congressional Quarterly Roll Call. He was a senior writer at Roll Call before that, and he was editor of National Journal Daily and Congress Daily. Later in the hour, Eliza Collins, who's a reporter for USA Today. We'll be welcoming your phone calls as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Twitter is @KDunnShow. And Jason, we welcome you. Hello.
Nice to be here, Kathleen.
Yeah, very nice to have you with us. Let's start with this health care bill. Mitch McConnell has his hands full this week. He's got to make people happy on two very incompatible sides. Can you talk about those sides and what are the chances are that the bill will be modified so that everybody's going to be happy and vote yes?
Well, I don't know about the happiness part of it, but we may be closer to just having a vote. As you said, Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the United States Senate, he has been writing and drafting with several of his own aides a very sort of close to the vest version of the health care bill to partially repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, or as is known, Obamacare. The reason that this is becoming sort of an issue with like having to, try to please different wings of the party is that they're using this expedited budget process called reconciliation. Without going into a lot of detail about that, it basically allows the majority party to pass a bill without having to worry about the Senate filibuster. Mm-hmm. But the catch is that everything has to relate somehow to taxes and spending and deficit reduction.
I see.
So basically, Mitch McConnell is caught, as you said, in this pickle between two, factions of his own party. So he doesn't have to worry about Democrats anymore. He doesn't have to worry about, trying to overcome a filibuster where he needs 60 votes. He has 52 senators, so he can pass this on a majority basis. And he only actually needs 50 votes to do that, because if there's a tie, 50-50 tie, he can call in the vice president, Mike Pence, and he would cast the tie-breaking vote. Mm-hmm. But the issue is that for conservatives, one of them is Wisconsin's own Ron Johnson.
Yes.
Mike Lee from Utah, Ted Cruz from Texas, and Rand Paul from Kentucky, they don't feel that the bill goes far enough. They feel that this is, in some ways, just watering Obamacare down a little bit. It still leaves in place the overall structure of the law that they've made, a concerted effort to repeal over the last 7 years. Now, Ron Johnson he signed on to a letter with his three colleagues. He has really been saying, I am open to negotiation, but I really don't believe that we've had enough time to consider this. So a lot more of his concerns have to do with the fact that he just doesn't feel like he has had time to process it, or his constituents in Wisconsin have had time to process it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other side of the spectrum, you have you have senators who are from states that perhaps expanded the Medicaid program, and one of the things that this bill would do, this bill and the House bill before it, would curtail the expansion of Medicaid. That was responsible for a lot of people being able to get health care from the Affordable Care Act. There's a lot of attention paid to the individual markets that were set up by the new law, but actually quite a few people gained coverage just simply because they were eligible for Medicaid in the way that it was expanded. So Dean Heller is a Republican from Nevada, and he's one of the people who comes from a state, Nevada, that expanded the Medicaid system. The governor there, Brian Sandoval, is a very popular Republican, and he says we can't do this. We can't kick, you know, people off of Medicaid. And so that's a concern that you see echoed in other states like Maine, where Republican Susan Collins has voiced concerns about the bill, or Alaska, where Lisa Murkowski is a Republican up there, and she has some concerns with the bill. In addition, and I apologize for speaking in all these, you know, it is this complex thing. It's this real weird calculus. You have senators from Midwest and Appalachian states like Ohio and West Virginia who are extremely concerned about the opioid outbreak there. And when one of the things that the Affordable Care Act has done is it has expanded treatment options for people who are suffering from you know, like being addicted to opioids or other drugs. And so without that money, like Republicans like Rob Portman from Ohio and Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia say, you know, we can't just cut people off. We need to be able to help the people in our state, you know, like avoid this, you know, real scourge there. And so it Mitch McConnell like sort of pulls on one thread and it affects the other threads. So if he goes too close to where the moderates are, like, you know, the people from the states that I just mentioned that expanded Medicaid, that he may lose entirely the four, you know, who voiced, you know, concerns that it doesn't go far enough, that the bill doesn't go far enough to repeal Medicare, the Affordable Care Act. So it's a real tough, it is a situation where anything he does will have an effect. And again, he can only lose two members of his own caucus.
Well, the people who haven't had much say over all of this are the American people who are going to be affected by changes to their health care. What is the rush on this bill? Why aren't there hearings? Why do we have to have it passed or before the 4th of July? Why not have people talk about it?
So I can give you the official line from Republican leaders, and then I can give you the subtext.
All right.
So the official line that Mitch McConnell will use at different events where he is challenged on this, about why the rush, why haven't we had any public hearings. There have been exactly zero public hearings during this Congress about the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. There have been a couple of what's referred to as business meetings or markups on the House side, but the process has been very sort of opaque. Now, that has opened up, you know, a lot of criticism, because Republicans have complained for years that the process by which the Affordable Care Act was passed was a rushed process, even though the you know, it took about a year and a half of debate, of public hearings, of public markups, of time on the floor. So Democrats sort of scoff at that. But what McConnell will say is that we have been debating this for years now, and so it basically, like, we don't need to go through the hearing process. We don't need to do these things. Now, that is, I mean, certainly it has been an issue of you know, in Congress and in politics. But one thing that is, you know, also on the, you know, on that sort of consideration is that the longer the issue stays around and the more open it is to for people to view the bill and to consider it and see, like, oh, wow, this would affect my state this way, and this would affect, you know, this state that way, is that it is a, as President Trump found out at the beginning of the year, and as every person who's worked on this bill or healthcare in general for the last, say several decades, knows, healthcare is very difficult. It is a very difficult topic to tackle. It's incredibly complex. It's not just some small provision of the tax code that affects a few hundred people or something like that. This affects literally every single person in the United States in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be a real political loser at this point. Now, and at this point too, McConnell would like to get on to other things that he feels perhaps, you know, favor Republicans more, like talking about taxes. So he is, his interest and the interest of the Republican leadership is that they want some sort of resolution sooner rather than later.
But don't they need to be really careful with this bill, Jason, because so many people are affected by health care? We all need plans that won't cost more money or allow us to have coverage, pre-existing conditions, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that the Republicans have fashioned in some form a bill that will make most Americans happy?
I would not say that with any confidence at this point. I mean, from what we have seen, certainly just from members of Mitch McConnell's own caucus, they have said, you know, one of the things that Dean Heller said when he appeared before the, you know, with the governor of Nevada, Brian Sandoval, on Friday when he said that he couldn't support the current iteration. And granted, this is a Republican, and this is not some sort of firebrand Republican who likes to tweak leadership. He is very much a guy who likes to, you know, make his leadership happy. He said, you know, the idea that this will affect premiums, this will lower premiums, is simply not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the Republicans saying that, and it is an incredibly tricky situation when you start altering altering the healthcare system, and certainly when you start making promises about the healthcare system. I mean, President Obama, I'm sure, would love to have had the line back where he said, "If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor."
Right.
I mean, and that was one of those things that, you know, it just sort of came out and people latched onto it. So it is a very tricky calculus with the politics of it. And, you know, that right now there really is very difficult to find anybody who's excited about this legislation. And because part of it is that, you know, the members know that it's this sort of like sword, you know, like over their heads. And also, you know, in the previous iteration, and when they were debating the Affordable Care Act, you know, the Obama administration and the Democrats in Congress brought on all the different interest groups, whether it was the AARP or the American Medical Association or the pharmaceutical, you know, groups or the American health insurance plans, so that everybody sort of got something out of it and was on board. None of these groups are on board with this. The American Medical Association just today put out this scathing, you know, statement of opposition, saying right at the top of their letter, this legislation, you know, would force us to violate the Hippocratic Oath.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, it is very strong. And it is also very difficult. So the American Hospital Association also came out earlier in opposition to this bill. When you can get the hospitals and the doctors on the same page, mm-hmm. it's a rare moment of agreement. And that's just one group after another. AARP hates this. Hates the bill, you know, because they're concerned that people, older Americans, you know, in who are not quite of retirement age yet, not yet eligible for Medicare, they'll be priced out because the bill would allow insurance companies to charge them a little bit
mm-hmm.
more. So it is a really it is a politically perilous time for Republicans, which may be one of the reasons that they just want to get it off their plate.
Right. Well, and certainly with those people in that age group are people who vote, so you would think that they have to have a political calculation here as well.
It's difficult to count out Mitch McConnell because he is the type of leader in Congress who really doesn't do a whole lot that doesn't serve some sort of political purpose. I mean, mm-hmm. he's very canny about his motives, and he tries to take on the heat himself to keep it away from his caucus. But people are just not seeing what has gone into this decision because, as you said, you know,
it's
typically the most loyal voters are older Americans.
Mm-hmm. Where you wrote an intriguing thing on Twitter this morning, reminding us, let's just do a short history before we go to phone calls. Where was health care reform on this very day 8 years ago?
It was being marked up. There were hearings, markups. I mean, the Democrats were in sort of full-on mode of making sure that, you know, that everybody sort of got their say. And, you know, one of the things that the Democrats are trying to remind their Republican colleagues is that, like, despite no Republican voting for the end product, of Affordable Care Act, they had numerous amendments either in committee or on the floor of each chamber that were incorporated into the final product. And so, and that was because it was a public, you know, there were public hearings, public markups, and everybody got their own, their chance for input.
Jason Dick is our guest, the first part of All Things Political Day today, deputy editor at Congressional Quarterly Roll Call. We're talking about health care because I know that it's front and center in Americans' concerns right now, but there are other issues we will move into as we carry on. I'm sure that many of you have thoughts about what's going to be happening. Do you think it's going to pass? Do you think that McConnell is skilled enough negotiator that he'll be able to get these two incompatible, seemingly incompatible sides together, very conservative Republicans and more moderate Republicans. We also have the Congressional Budget Office that has yet to give us a markup on this bill. Will that change what you think about the bill? Do you think it'll be a better health care bill than the Affordable Care Act? And move us into, if you would like, other areas. The Supreme Court had a big announcement today that they will allow a limited version of President Trump's ban on travelers from six mostly Muslim countries. They will take up the case, but they also said that it may be moot by the time that it hears it, because the ban is supposed to be a temporary one while the government reviews its vetting procedures. I'm not sure, we'll have to ask Jason if vetting procedures are going on right now. So that was news today, and there are other items of interest, so we'll talk about all of them. But I know you care about health care, and so we'll take your questions in a moment here on the Ideas Network. All right, phone calls now for Jason, and let's start with Mike in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi. This whole discussion by the Republicans in regard to our health care, it's like a three-handed magician. They want you to focus on the premiums, and they're not. There's no discussion about the deductibles or the copays, and we really need the reporters to ask these questions for us. What about the deductibles? What's going to happen to the copays? Because they could slash the premiums down to zero. But if we've got a $100,000 deductible, we essentially have, you know, we're back to square one again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that'll be interesting to watch is that the insurance companies who wanted to participate in like individual markets, they had to file their rates just last week. And so one of the things that people are watching, and particularly with this Congressional Budget Office score coming out soon, is what is happening to just out-of-pocket costs in general. And so that is something that a number of people are trying to monitor. It's difficult because every, you know, different plan will write a different, you know, for different individuals or different, like, sort of plans, like the numbers will be different. But we should get, and it will come this afternoon, we've just gotten word that the Congressional Budget Office will be issuing their report on the costs and the coverage of the Senate health care bill this afternoon.
Okay.
So I hate to say that everything I say could be completely changed by the end of this afternoon, but such is the plight of news now, in that things happen so quickly. So one of the things that you were saying, like, right before you opened it up to phone lines is, excuse me, how, you know, does Mitch McConnell have the votes? And what will be the effect of this CBO score? And I think actually, like, the CBO score will give us the indication of whether he has those votes or not. Because if it is anything similar to what the House bill, the estimates for that was, which was that, you know, more than 23 million people would lose their health care coverage, then it becomes a lot less likely that Mitch McConnell will be able to get 50 votes for this bill. So Mitch McConnell, the Senate is coming back in later this afternoon, around 5:30 or so. They have a vote on a confirmation vote on the Nuclear Regulatory Commissioner chairwoman, and at that point we're going to be looking to see what senators are saying as they're coming in to vote on it, and also whether Mitch McConnell says anything about the schedule, in particular if he tries to set up maybe something else to do this week, just as a fallback plan in case he thinks he doesn't have the votes.
Who put, you know, it's hard to know very much about how this was put together because it's all been done secretively, but Jason, do you know, I've heard it was Senate staffers who fashioned this bill. Is that true?
It's primarily, yes, it is true. It's primarily the majority leader's own staff, and then, you know, with consultation from some people who are or healthcare and budget experts on staff. But the, you know, there was a real sense in the 2 weeks leading up to this, again, among Republicans. Democrats had already, like, signaled their displeasure with this well ahead of time, but there was a lot of displeasure among Republicans, and not the firebrand types. I mean, these are the sort of the country club, you know, I just want to pass legislation type Republicans who just said, you know, this, I mean, I have no idea. You tell me what's in the bill. There was a lot of frustration going on.
What about the president? Has he been involved?
So we've gotten some indication that he has talked to a few Republicans, some of the holdouts, like that he had talked to Rand Paul, for instance, a Republican from Kentucky, and one of the dissidents of that conservative group of four over the weekend. He has been a little bit more hands-off from everything that we've seen than with the Senate bill than he was the House bill. Some of that may just be where we are in the process. When something's being written in secret, it's difficult to latch on to any details where you can sort of sell. I mean, the president, likes to view himself as this big deal maker. But when you don't even know what the terms of negotiation are, it makes it difficult for deal makers to work. So now that some of the details are out there, we might see a stepped up White House presence.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. Claire in Madison. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thank you.
Sure.
Kathleen and your guest, I'm self-brushed. This is not a health care plan. This is not a health insurance plan. This is a big tax cut plan for America's 400 wealthiest families are going to get $33 billion in tax cuts with this plan. Why is that even in a health care bill? And it screws poor people, the elderly, disabled, many, many kids in this country. I mean, this is just an outrage. And one other point, how come we never ask, how can we pay for it? We can't pay for it. When it comes to our huge black hole, multi-trillion dollar military budget, which is already bigger than the next eight countries combined, it just makes no sense to me.
Thanks, Claire, for the call. Yeah, inform us about the taxes that were placed on the wealthiest to help make Obamacare work. How did that factor in, and will those be totally repealed, Jason?
So there's a series of taxes that were implemented as a part of the Affordable Care Act in order to pay for the legislation itself. They range from things like on the medical devices, that there was a surcharge or a tax put on medical device technologies, to what's referred to as the Cadillac tax, which taxes high end sort of premium health insurance plans. Republicans have always sort of made their displeasure at these taxes very, very obvious. It's a main talking point. They would be phased out with varying degrees, and the answer is, is it a tax cut or not? Yes, this would be considered a tax cut, and to set it would help, for the Republicans set up their own tax overhaul, which they hope to do after they finish health care. It provides them with some deficit reduction money, if you will, and also provides them with if they cut these, they have a little bit more money to play around with. So it is a fairly big tax cut, and it, particularly with things like the Cadillac tax, it only affects people at the higher end of the income spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Is this going to go? Is there going to be a vote later this week?
Like I said, I despite the prevalence of gamblers in my family, I don't like to bet on these things. I wish I knew. I mean, at this point, if I had to guess, I would say no, because there just doesn't seem to be any kind of movement among the Republicans who are dug in on it. Now, that being said, things change very rapidly, and they could change as rapidly as an hour from now or 2 hours from now, when the Congressional Budget Office releases its score. If they have anything that resembles a sort of a favorable score for Republican purposes, then they will. I think they're going to roll the dice, if you will, and kind of dare some people to vote against it. And this is one of the things that has been, this is the argument that for people who don't see the votes there, is that when it comes down to it, if a Republican has a chance to take a swipe at the Affordable Care Act, which they've all been doing for 7 years, right, are they really going to be the vote that keeps the law in place? Or are they going to stick to their guns? And so it's a sort of a fascinating dynamic. It's so tough to tell with only about an hour and a half possibly to go. And the reason I say that too is that the CBO tends to wait until the markets close to release big news.
Oh,
like
they
this.
Do. Just, oh.
Yeah, because they don't really like to, you know, like have any kind of deciding factor on whether people sell stocks or not. So we think that it may be coming in that if that it seems to be the pattern that has developed over the last few years on big ticket items like this. It has just been a Loctite process, and we've been trying our best. But you know, one of the things about the Congressional Budget Office is it's a nonpartisan office. The head of it is appointed by the majority leadership, but it's staffed with people who are very serious about their jobs, and they don't leak, and they take a lot of pride in their work. So, that's why their rulings their estimates tend to hold so much sway, is because they are professionals. So, if it is not something that's favorable to to Republicans, or it doesn't really add much to what the House would do, then I would say they try and figure out like how to do that. But if it's a more positive movement toward Republicans, then I could see Mitch McConnell.
See a vote.
You know what? I'm going to put this on the floor.
Okay, Jason. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Happy Monday. Happy week. Jason Dick, Deputy Editor at Congressional Quarterly Roll Call. We're continuing with all things political, just changing guests. Eliza Collins is with us now, a political reporter for USA Today. She covers Capitol Hill, was previously a reporter and web producer at Politico. Our phone number, we've spent the whole first half hour on health care. Feel free to have your calls be related to that. We just have some other areas we want to be sure and discuss before we return to what undoubtedly is the most important issue of the week, and that's the upcoming, we think, Senate vote. And now we found out the Congressional Budget Office will probably wait till, 3 o'clock our time to give their scoring of the Senate bill. Eliza, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Let's just move from health care for a moment to talk about the Supreme Court announcement today. They are allowing a limited version of the ban on travelers from the 6 mostly Muslim countries to take effect. Can you tell us more what that means? And then they said they will hear the case in the fall, right?
Right. And so this is a big deal because we really weren't sure if they were going to take it. It's a messy case, and it's a big deal to do something where, going up against the administration, but it looks like they will be taking it and hearing it. But the real win, and this is something you immediately saw, the president and his administration say, was the win is that it's allowing the ban to continue on a smaller version. So basically, if you have any connections to the United States, a family member, you've been accepted to college here, something like that, you can still come. But if you don't have connections, you're from one of these countries that have been selected, you're not allowed to come in. And so that had been put on pause from the lower courts, and now that is back to being open, which the administration is considering a win.
Mm-hmm. But you had these federal courts rule this to be unconstitutional, so I don't understand the law here completely. Is it unusual for the Supreme Court to go against their rulings and to say that the ban can continue to be in effect, at least in limited fashion, until the fall?
I'm not really sure because this is such a unique case. I mean, it definitely was. The lower courts did rule against it. Some of these lower courts are known for being a little bit more on the liberal side, so the Ninth Circuit tends to skew more to the left. The Supreme Court, as we know now, is 5-4 with Neil Gorsuch, 5 conservatives, although there is kind of a swing vote. But the main thing is that they're saying we are going to hear this, but in the meantime, we're not going to do anything with it, which in actual means that it can continue. So it's kind of like they're almost putting a pause just in the reverse direction while they wait to hear it.
Mm-hmm. And so they will be considering whether or not it was within the powers of the president to fashion a whole lot of immigration legislation, immigration reform, et cetera.
Exactly. Well, and the thing is, the president argues this is for the safety of the country, but what people have pointed to is comments he's made in the past. Of course, we remember during the campaign, he said that he called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, and he had that on his website for a long time. So until very recently. So things like that, people are pointing and saying there's ulterior motives. Look at what he said on the campaign trail. And recently he started retweeting. This was a travel ban. So you're actually seeing, in court cases, lawyers pointing to the president's Twitter, which is just completely unprecedented. But the argument the administration is making is ignore all those things we said before, and this is for the safety of the country.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Russia here for a moment. The president today asking for an apology over the investigations into Russia's election meddling and possible collusion with his 2016 campaign. An apology because these probes, he says, have not publicly turned up any proof of coordination between Trump associates and the Russian government. Isn't he kind of jumping the gun there? These investigations are ongoing, aren't they?
Yes, and this is just typical Trump kind of all over the place. He had been saying for a very long time that there was no evidence that there was even Russia had even been involved in the election. There was a couple of points when he said maybe they were, but he really hadn't even said that they were. Of course, the intelligence community is about bipartisan. Republicans and Democrats here on Capitol Hill say they've concluded that Russia's involved. It's just for them a question of whether the Trump campaign had any connection. But now that there was this Washington Post story last week, this long, deep dive that basically looked at the way the Obama administration had handled the news that Russia was, in fact, meddling. And that got picked up, assuming Trump saw that, read it, said, oh, well, let's blame this on Obama. Mm-hmm. So over the weekend, he's changed his tactic, and now he is saying that if Obama knew Russia meddled, why didn't he do anything sooner? And of course, there's a whole slew of arguments for why Obama didn't, but Trump has decided that that's his new point, and why aren't we focusing on Obama? Why are people focusing on me?
Right. So why didn't President Obama act sooner?
Well, what his administration said is that they didn't want to come out mid-election and say, look, Russia's meddling and trying to hurt Hillary Clinton, because they thought the people think that they were just saying that to hurt Trump, which I can't imagine that would go over very well as someone who covered the campaign of the president. They thought it would look like they were kind of putting their thumbs on the scale for Hillary Clinton. There was also other reasons. There were some private meetings with congressional leaders who pushed back. The White House also tried to go about this just through their own channels. I think at one point they used a system that is really only used for like nuclear threats to communicate with Russia to say, hey, cut it out. So there's a lot of different things. There's definitely arguments that could be made that they needed to do something sooner. But at the same time, this was such an intense election, and I can't imagine if Obama said, hey, Russia's trying to help Trump, let's step in, people would have been let that go easily.
Right. You wrote a piece today, I believe, on Trey Gowdy, the new head of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, who says, you write, he plans to turn the committee away from its investigation of Russian meddling in the election, that he believes that it belongs under the purview of the special counsel or other congressional committees. Are there other reasons why he decided to move away from this, and what investigations or requests is he stopping?
Well, this is really interesting because Trey Gowdy, you guys might remember him, he's a South Carolina Republican, former prosecutor, really intense guy, intense questioner. He led the special Benghazi committee, which, of course, there was that marathon hearing with Hillary Clinton, hours and hours and hours, to see what happened in Benghazi. So he's no stranger to investigations, to questioning. He's actually on the Intelligence Committee, Judiciary Committee, and Oversight Committee, which are all congressional committees investigating what's happening with Russia. So it's interesting that he is saying, let's not focus on this on Oversight Committee. What he told, there was a small group of reporters who met with him. He just became Oversight Chair. And what he told us was, you know, under our jurisdiction are things like the National Archives and the Census, and we should focus on those. He didn't say, I'm not doing anything with Russia. He was very careful not to do that, but he did say it's case by case. And I think there are other committees, or Bob Mueller, who's special counsel, who this falls under better. And I don't want to step on anyone's toes, which is just sort of a different approach than Jason right. Chaffetz, who had the role before him.
Mm-hmm. And what's the story with the investigations? Is the House doing anything this week, the Senate?
You know, it kind of gone, I don't know if they're doing things quietly, but there's no blockbuster hearings like we've been watching this week. I think right now here in Capitol Hill, it feels like all the oxygen is being focused on health care. They break for recess next week. So I think they're kind of trying to tie up some ends. That doesn't mean, of course, these committees are probably still investigating, but we just don't have any of these blockbuster hearings right now.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. There's a lot of blockbuster news going on. Right?
Yeah, we're busy
enough. Yeah. You don't need that in the week as well. We're going to welcome phone calls. Eliza Collins is our guest. She is a political reporter for USA Today, covers Capitol Hill. And we're talking all things political this week. Spent a lot of time on health care, and we'll return to that topic as well. But also the decision by the Supreme Court to take up the travel ban and allowing major portions of the ban that the president gave us some months ago to continue until the court hears this case in the fall. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Join us with whatever political conversation you'd like to have. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We love to read your messages there. And we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network. We're welcoming phone calls for all things political right now for Eliza Collins. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. A lot of the comments are related still to health care, Eliza. Here's one. A caller wonders if the high salaries of members of Congress makes it tough for them to relate to in terms of health care. Those who make much less, say $15 an hour. What do you think? Is there a disconnect?
I think there's always a disconnect from, you know, elected officials here. We're in the swamp. I do think that I would argue they're government jobs, so they're actually not paid as much as, say, some of these CEOs or corporations that are getting the tax cuts on the bill. But I think, you know, it's difficult. Hopefully, as elected representatives, they understand what people are going through and they're talking to them. But, you know, they're all here, and it is a different world than the average person working minimum wage. They certainly are not.
Mm-hmm. What are the other stories? Do you think that the... Well, let's go to healthcare with you for a moment, too, because it certainly is the issue of the week. Do you think Mitch McConnell can get the four conservatives and five moderates to sign on to a healthcare plan that will be okay for all of them?
I have no idea. I wish I could tell you, you know, a definitive answer. I covered this... a very similar bill in the House, and it looked like it was dead, you know, multiple times, and it came back to life, and it finally passed very narrowly, and that was because Tom MacArthur, who was a more moderate member, worked with Mark Meadows, who's very conservative, and they came up with this plan that brought people on board, and even then they sort of had to strong arm and pressure people into voting in the end. It's different in the Senate. One thing is they just don't have that much time. We saw today the Republican whip, John Cornyn, say he had previously said we have, like, much of the summer to do this. And today he said, nope, it has to happen this week. So it's already almost the end of the day Monday. There's just a few more days for all that to happen. They can also only lose two votes. And I can think of two people off the top of my head, Rand Paul and Susan Collins, who are pretty likely to be no. And then, of course, there's, you know, seven other people who all have their various issues.
Yes.
And if you go to our right, then you lose people on the left and vice versa. And when I say on the left, I mean the more moderate Republicans. No Democrats are going to vote for this bill. But it's going to be really tough. So unless there's some really positive conversations going on, I just, from what I'm hearing and seeing right now, I don't know how it happens this week.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Ann in Green Bay. Hi, Ann.
Hello. I've been hearing rumors that Justice Kennedy may be retiring, and I'm just wondering how that would change the face of the federal Supreme Court.
Yeah, that would change it. It would be big. We're not sure if he is going to, but that would give President Trump a nomination, and Kennedy was the swing vote. So while he was a more conservative member, he was kind of known as that. Whichever side he went with was really the side that won. So while Neil Gorsuch was a win for Trump, he was replacing a conservative. But if Trump is able to nominate someone to replace Kennedy, it would very well make the court 5-4 likely in most decisions.
Thanks very much for your call, Ann. Ryan in Rhinelander, hi.
Yes, hi. I'm on my cell phone calling. I'm on the side of the road now. I was traveling, listening to your show, and I would like to talk about the health care issue from the fact that we have a 50-50 split in this country politically, and no matter what legislation is being passed, there is no compromise anymore from these parties. And whatever legislation is passed, you're leaving out approximately 50% of the people. So I don't see how any bill that's passed is going to help the majority of the people in this country.
Yeah, and that's a real concern you're hearing. And that's something you're actually hearing some of the at least in the Senate, some of the senators who have been around a lot longer and are used to the days when you would compromise and when being a moderate senator was kind of more normal. And I don't know how these things pass. Obamacare was passed by all Democrats, and now it looks like if it's undone, it'll be by all Republicans, and that makes it difficult. And you are hearing that for sure from Republicans saying, I wish we'd gone about this a different way. I wish we worked with Democrats. There's been a few kind of stop and start quiet groups working on it. But the thing is that Republicans tried to, or they campaigned for like 7 years on repealing Obamacare. And the word repeal makes it so that Democrats just can't really get on board because that's their health law. So I think if everyone changed the language, you might actually see some more compromise. But it's hard to go back and say, you know, we said we'd repeal it, but actually we just want to work with Democrats on it. I don't think that would get people very excited.
No, that's not going to happen. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
The New York Times had some interesting pieces yesterday, and I want your response to this, looking at how one of the articles, 5 months after leaving office, Mr. Obama watches mostly in silence as his successor takes a political sledgehammer to his legacy. Mr. Trump has made it clear that if it has Mr. Obama's name on it, he would just as soon erase it from the national hard drive. Do you see a concerted effort on the part of President Trump to erase President Obama's legacy?
Definitely. I think that was something he ran on. And, you know, we saw Hillary Clinton run kind of on being a continuation of President Obama. She had been in his cabinet. They were very close. We saw Obama and Michelle Obama come out for her on the campaign trail. And on the opposite end, President Trump campaigned as the opposite of Obama in so many ways. And we saw right away he came in and undid a bunch of the executive orders and regulations that Obama had put in place. And it's just continuing. I mean, we saw, you know, regulations like even on environmental things, and now, of course, healthcare is the big one.
And what do you think would happen if President Obama spoke out more about this?
I think that for his base, it would be effective, but for the people that Trump is appealing to, and frankly, the people that are voting for these Republicans and keeping them in office, having Obama defending his health care bill is not going to do very much. Of course, he's going to defend it. You know, I'm actually looking, once you said that, I pulled it up at Obama's Facebook, and he gave this lengthy post, you know, right after the bill came out, basically defending it and saying that this bill is mean, which we had heard Trump said about the House bill, actually, at one point. It's a really long post, very thoughtful, but again, you know, besides the little reports on it, it's not, Obama's not president anymore. And so unless you really are committed to Obama and a big fan, people aren't kind of keeping in touch with what he's putting on his Facebook.
Let's go to Nate in Milwaukee. Hello, Nate.
Hi there. I was going to ask your, now granted, we're leading into the next show, but I was going to ask your guest about the gerrymandering court case from Wisconsin, and actually mentioning Mr. Whitford, if you could thank him for me when he shows up for trying to defend democracy in our state and possibly the country. So just touching on the earlier caller, was Trump encouraging Kennedy to resign to appoint a new person, and if so, were the Republican senators actually going to live up to their campaign pledge of letting the people choose who should appoint the next Supreme Court justice, which means consulting Hillary Clinton?
Well, a lot of different things there. So the first one, I don't know a ton about the Wisconsin case. We have a Supreme Court reporter who does an amazing job at USA Today. I do know the big thing is that this is a big deal that they're taking this up, because it's the first time in like a decade that they're going to look at gerrymandering, and gerrymandering has been happening all over the country. It's part of the reason why Congress is actually becoming more partisan. So we talked about earlier, less agreement. That's because these districts are safe red or safe blue, and it's really about the primary and not the general election. So the fact that this is getting brought up at the Supreme Court, that'll change the way things move forward, however they rule. The second one was Trump encouraging Kennedy to retire? I don't know about that specific conversation, but I do know that they would not be upset if he did. And there's stories out there about kind of conversations and some quiet pressuring, you know, oh, you want to enjoy your time off, kind of things, but I don't actually know what was coming from the president. And the final thing is the people did technically weigh in on who will replace on the Supreme Court. Trump released a list of, I believe it was like 21, although, but it was somewhere around there, people that he would consider appointing to the Supreme Court if there was an opening, and that was to that was where we saw Neil Gorsuch, but he has said that he will use that same list for the next opening. And he did that during the campaign. So by people voting for Trump as president, in effect, they were weighing in on who they would like to see. And that's something I cover conservatives here pretty closely. And that's something a lot of them say. You know, they didn't necessarily like this or that about Trump, but they liked his list, and the Supreme Court was why they voted for him. Mm.
And Sandy writes on Facebook, isn't the idea behind defunding health care by the federal government so that states can fund the health care? Why isn't more being discussed about what states would do if they had to navigate health care by themselves? Why isn't it stated and restated that the federal government has more power to contain costs? What have governors said about this, if anything?
So governors have been very vocal about this on the Medicaid issue. Under Obamacare, Medicaid, which basically kind of like an insurance program or health care coverage for low-income, elderly children, they could take money from the federal government and decide how to distribute it and expand their Medicaid programs. And 32 states, including D.C., accepted it. And so now, and some of the states were under Republican governors, and so now you're seeing a real concern, not some, one of the issues with the health care bill, but about losing that funding. The health care bill, the House bill would shut off that funding pretty outright, and the Senate bill would take 3 years to phase it out, but they would both kind of end the expansion. So you are hearing from governors and Republican governors. In Ohio, John Kasich has been very, very vocal about this, and this won't work. Healthcare is not, you know, we need to get together with Democrats. He has been very anti-repeal effort, and part of that is because so many people in the state did get covered under Medicaid.
Mm-hmm. Our previous guest this hour said that he and said that the Congressional Budget Office statements about the cost and how many people will lose insurance, if any, that they would have their report sometime today. He thought it would be after the markets would close, so we should expect a report sometime in the next couple hours. How will their report, their marking of this legislation, affect its possible passage or defeat?
Well, this is huge. The House bill said that 23 million people will be uninsured. So it's important to say it's not that they would lose their insurance, because some people can, because there's no longer a requirement to get insurance, the individual mandate, people can elect not to have it. So it's not like every tomorrow, you know, 23 million people sign on and they don't have health care insurance. But 23 million people uninsured is a big number, and a lot of moderate Republicans would keep for that in the House, but that number came out after they voted for it. So they had voted and approved it, and then the number came out. The Senate is not doing that. So if it comes up today and there's a number like that, I can't imagine someone like Susan Collins, mm-hmm. who's very moderate, or Dean Heller, who's you know, a vulnerable in a state that Hillary Clinton won, they're going to be able to say, yeah, that's no big deal. That's fine. I'll vote for it. So it's going to put a lot of pressure, and I think we'll see some statements, you know, in support or against the bill.
More to follow just in a couple hours. Eliza, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Eliza Collins, political reporter for USA Today. She covers Capitol Hill. Thanks to Gretchen Brown for producing this hour, to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. Stay with us. The Supreme Court is going to hear a major challenge to partisan gerrymandering. It's a case that comes from Wisconsin. We'll talk with the named plaintiff in the case, a retired law professor from UW-Madison, about gerrymandering and what impact it's had on Wisconsin after the news.